Welcome. Before we enjoy this week's conversation with Andrea Cabral of Black Cat Creative Studio, I want to talk a little bit about our sponsor this week, Embroiderers Guild of America, EGA, and it's a community of stitch-minded people who inspire passion for needle arts through education and celebration of its heritage. And you can learn all about them at egausa.org. And a couple of things that you need to note. Number one, do consider joining. Consider joining. They really are offering an awful lot these days as an organization, needlework of all kinds, online classes, free classes, all kinds of things. Do consider joining. And if you do, please mention that you heard about it at Fiber Talk. Some new things that are available now, free holiday projects and inspiration on their website, and then online classes. Coming soon is a goldwork bracelet with Cynthia Jackson. Registration starts November 4 for that, so that's already underway, and it ends December 2. So you want to act quickly on that. Then also Kimono Revisited with John Waddell, and that registration starts December 2 and ends January 6. So check those out, and then definitely look into the Lightning Rounds, the group correspondence courses. They're called Lightning Rounds, and the Education Department handpicks those for individual EGA members to register without a group for a limited time, and they're a great opportunity for members at large. I'm a member at large. Works out great for me, and for small EGA chapters that have a difficulty filling a larger group order to take a group correspondence course. So these Lightning Rounds are great. And the current round registration ends December 1, and there are four classes available. How Does Your Garden Grow? Perfectly Counted Crosses, Mark and Paint on Canvas and Fabric, and Roses. So I've got to register by 12-1, December 1, for those. So act quickly. Great opportunity to get a class in without having a great big group of people. And then, of course, note in your calendar, September 1 to September 5 of next year, Downtown Chicago, the national seminar, The Magnificent Stitch. Do consider, as I said, joining the EGA. Really a great organization offering an awful lot for needleworkers of all kinds at egausa.org. And do mention that you heard about it from Fiber Talk if you join or if you take a class. Either way, I'd really appreciate it. And now we'll enjoy the conversation with Andrea Cabral, and then also note for you that Andrea will be our guest Sunday. This is going up Friday, Saturday evening. Then Sunday, November 8 at 2 o'clock p.m. on our YouTube channel, Andrea will join us and we'll have an opportunity to talk with her about her various designs and how she goes about them and what inspires them. And the reason we're doing it on Sunday is Andrea is from Maia, Portugal. So this is an opportunity to hear from a designer and see her work and talk to her live, where normally in our evening shows we can't do that because it's the middle of the night. So join us, enjoy the podcast, and then join us for the live show with Andrea, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on our YouTube channel. And now, this week's show with Andrea Cabral. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week from Portugal, Andrea Cabral. Andrea, welcome.
Thank you for receiving me.
Glad to have you with us. Now, Andrea's business, her creative entity is Black Cat Creative Studio, and I encourage people to follow her on Instagram. It is some fascinating needlework, unique in so many ways, and so glad to be able to talk to you, Andrea. It's I've followed you for a while now, and it's just every time you post something, I'm all over it. It's really really interesting. Now, so much of what you do, it's art because you mix painting and needlework and all kinds of other little things. Is there an art background with you?
Well, you're very kind. I don't define myself as an artist, and I don't think I'm an artist. I'm a curious
Okay.
I love drawing. I love painting. I did all of that all my life. And when I had to choose a career between art and science, I chose science because at the time my passion wasn't embroidery anymore, was genetics. So I went to study biology, but art was always there. In fact, I paid my college years. A lot of my expenses were paid by my work with embroidery. I used to make cross stitch to sell.
Oh.
Yes, cross stitch was my my job during the years in college.
Okay.
And I did huge complex projects, and I loved cross stitch. It was like math, you know, mathematics.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because you follow a pattern, it's very, you have to follow the rules very strictly. And at the time that worked for me, and I really enjoyed my cross stitch journey, and I don't want to do it anymore because at that in those days I had to work under pressure because I was studying and I need to earn a lot of money. So I can't see cross stitch anymore. I can't do it anymore because it's enough. It was but yes, well, art in my family, it's like food. My grandmother did it. My grandfather did it. I have sculptures in the family, painters. So we had free classes. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
My mother, every woman in Portugal a part of their education was to learn embroidery, sewing. Everything related with textiles.
Mm-hmm.
My mother learned, and she was so good at it that she went to a haute couture studio.
Mm-hmm.
She worked there for several years. She was she made the wedding dresses. I don't know if that's wedding dresses.
Yeah.
And she still makes the best winter coats. She's amazing. She pick up a fabric and she cuts the fabric and there's a coat in no time because she's really good at coats. And so she knew a lot, and she knew a lot about embroidery, beadwork,
mm-hmm.
Really complex stitching. And when I was little, I was very curious about everything, and I was used to sit next to her. She worked in the kindergarten by day, and then she made clothing at night. So to keep me quiet, she teach me embroidery.
Uh-huh.
My first embroidery was when I was 3 years old. I made an orange stem stitch.
Yeah.
A simple outline, stem stitch outline. An orange. That was my first embroidery at 3 years old, and
three.
I never stopped.
You're doing you're doing a stem stitch at three, and we as adults can have trouble doing that. Okay.
But I was a very weird child. I learned to read very fast. I loved books and I loved colors,
mm-hmm.
and that was my passion. And I need to know every single color there was.
Uh-huh.
And my mother couldn't pull up with it. She tells me that she used to made up names, because if she point me at turquoise, I would say, but this is turquoise. This can't be turquoise because it's another tone. So she had to make up a name so I could be quiet. That was my first approach to embroidery, was color. Then was texture. Texture is everything to me, and it's the difference between embroidery and painting. I love painting, but it lacks something. It's I don't know. I look at colors and I perceive smells, perceive other sensations rather than only visual.
Mm-hmm.
Colors are not only visual. They're also a smell. For instance, yellow. You can see a green yellow and you think about lemon. Or about, I don't know, fresh. It's fresh. You can feel color in your skin.
Mm-hmm.
If you're surrounded by a very cold color, you feel it. You feel it in your skin. And texture, it's another level of color. You can see texture, but you have to touch it. And painting lacks that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love Van Gogh because I when I discovered Van Gogh, I was 12 years old, I guess. I had my first job and I earned a little bit of money. And I went to buy a book about Van Gogh because I thought, this guy knows color better than anyone. And because I could touch his colors, I would see the pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these pictures had texture. And I thought, this is amazing. And I was obsessed by Van Gogh. And now that I'm on Instagram, for instance, I see a lot of people making embroideries of the designs are like Van Gogh paintings. And I see why. I understand exactly why these artists choose Van Gogh to portray in embroidery. Because it's all about texture. His paintings are almost sculptures. I love his work.
That's interesting. Because yeah, you do see a lot of people emulate in needlework his work. You do. It's not uncommon.
Yes. Yeah,
but I never thought about the texture part as a reason why. That's good. Yeah.
It's the depth. You know, there's depth. There's it's very easy to portray in embroidery exactly because of that. Klimt is another one that it's always being copied. His works, Klimt. Klimt mm-hmm. is also has the same depth. Classical paintings cannot be portrayed easily in embroidery, maybe by genius like, do you know Casey Zavaglia work? Casey?
No, I don't know.
Zavaglia? Casey Zavaglia, she makes paintings, classic paintings. You look at them from a distance and you don't realize they are embroidery.
No.
And I think she was the first one I saw that I thought, wow, this could be really amazing if I try to make paintings out of embroidery. Because what I see most is floral, a lot of floral work, where you see all kinds of stitches. You see, I don't know, bullion stitch. I'm so sorry. I'm very bad in names because your stitches' names are different from mine. So I have to translate, but the translation is never good enough. But, well, what I was trying to say is I see a lot of floral embroidery, and mm-hmm. you see French knots, bullion stitch,
bullion. Yeah, bullion, sure.
Bullion yeah. stitch, mm-hmm. yes. I don't know, feather stitch. And it's like a palette of several stitches. And that is interesting. And I used to do that when I was trying to portray moss or lichens or fungi. Mm-hmm. I like to use those kind of stitches.
Mm-hmm.
But Casey, she showed me that we can make a perfect skin tone with stitching, and it's not a satin stitch that she used. She used a very unique blending technique that I don't even understand how she do it. But it has to do with the painting background. I guess if you have a painting background, you can easily embroidery. You can, the other way around, I don't know, but painting for me was the first step for embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
Blending colors, when you have a painting knowledge, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's really, it's different. I think it's in my experience.
So
painting is important.
So you grew up in a very creative environment. It sounds like your entire family, but really no formal art training. But your work shows you know beautiful artwork.
Because I never stop. My notebooks at school were like journals.
Yeah.
my teachers love my. Sometimes at the end of the year, I will give them my notebooks. they would ask me to. I never kept nothing to myself. I'm very, I let go of things very easily. I was told you before about cross stitch.
Mm-hmm.
I made hundreds of cross stitch. I made a lot of frame and in big frames, things really romantic. Things that didn't speak to me, but it speaks to my clients. I had custom orders. I never had no one telling me what to do. They would tell me, I need something blue and green for my kitchen. And I would tell them, well, what do you like? What are your interests, your values, your favorite tones? What do you do as a hobby? And from that information, I would pull up with something. And they would buy at the end, they would buy it, but they would never know what they were going to get. Oh. But that's my way of working still. I don't do custom orders. Like, can you please do me this? And they show me the pattern. No, I have to know a little bit about the person. I find out something, and I never had a refusal. People always keep what I make. So I guess they. This has a lot to do with psychology, too.
Yes. I guess. Yes. Well, no. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that. Yeah. So you put yourself through school, doing cross stitch. So you're doing commission work, cross stitch, while you're trying to study and go to class.
Yes, I did painting too. Some painting.
Oh my.
And I did a lot of things to just for gifts. I can't be. How do you say when you don't move? I have to do something with my hands. If I'm seeing a movie, I have to have something in my hands,
mm-hmm.
or else the movie doesn't have rhythm. The movie loses interest if I don't do something with my hands. When I go to movies, I take, for instance, a piece of paper and I make origami in the dark. I'm a very weird person, Gary.
No, you're creative. It's okay. You're creative. Yeah. And I can see how doing cross stitch, trying to make money and under pressure, that'll make you after a while. I think just about anything like that, any hobby kind of thing, after a while, you just go, you don't want any more to do with it. When you're constantly under pressure every time you pick it up. I can see how that would just turn you off, but it didn't turn you off in terms of needlework. You just did cross stitch, which is an interesting thing, because for most people it would be, I want nothing more to do with a needle and thread. So you just found a different channel.
My daughters say I was born with a thimble in my finger, and it's and it's the truth. It's almost true. I sometimes go to pick them to school. And I realize while I'm driving that I have the thimble on my finger.
Oh, you don't even recognize it.
I don't. It's part of me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I go to take to the bathroom to take a shower, and I'm inside the shower, and because it doesn't fall off my finger, it belongs to me.
Right.
Yes, my thimble is always there. I really enjoy what I do. Yeah. I really like it. I'm not. Biologist, that's not my job. I give up when I have my first daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I began to be a staying home mom. I don't know if that's the word.
Sure.
Staying home.
Yep.
And that's very frustrating, because people expect a lot of me, and I should be a career woman, and I give it all up because I wanted to be a mother first. And it was when I, in the sad moments when I was feeling alone, that I realized that I had to do something that could be a passion for me. And laboratories, sterile surfaces where everything is white, working with special clothing, it was not for me anymore. And I realized that embroidery was the thing it always followed me around. So I had to take it seriously, and I've been taking it seriously the last 3 years. It's not easy. and sometimes it's a struggle and it's frustrating, but it's a passion. I can't get rid of this. This is part of me.
Yeah.
I really love what I do. I even go to a shop to buy materials. It's exciting for me. It's wonderful. The smell of a shop where I can find fabrics and threads. I mean, all those colors. I love that those places, and I can't see how I could do something else now.
Yeah. Yeah. So a gap in your needlework as you were raising young kids, did you stop for a while, or have you always done some kind of needlework?
Let's say that my house is always changing because I was painting walls, I was making upholstery, I was making new curtains every now and then, cushions, my couch, we made my couch. I was always doing something. I have a couch made of paper, only made of paper. It has paper and glue, and it's a couch. It took a long time to make, and it's a very good couch. You can see two people, I don't know, two people with 100 kilos each. You don't know kilos, I remember now. But two very fat people can sit there, and it won't fall down. It won't fall down.
Okay.
And I only use the paper that I had home. We had from IKEA a lot of we had the furniture that came from IKEA to our kitchen,
yeah.
And it left so much cardboard, so much cardboard. I thought I can't put this to recycle. I'm going to do something with it because it was so much cardboard. It had to be used, and now it's a couch.
So you took IKEA cardboard from your kitchen furniture and made a couch.
Yes.
Okay.
I made a couch, and it has a small structure made of cardboard. You know those tubes that when you use aluminium paper, you call it aluminium foil,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those rolls that in the end, they are very steady and they are very difficult to break. That's the structure of the couch. A lot of those. And then the cardboard from IKEA and then I cover it with pages, book page. I read a lot. I'm a huge I'm a crazy collector of books. I love books. Books are my life, even more than embroidery. And every time I read a book and I think it's, I don't know, how can I put it? It's not correctly politically correct, or it's diminishing for women, for example. I take this page, I destroy the book by using it to my frames, my hoop frames. You certainly notice that some of my frames are different. They don't look like wood or like
right. No.
Well, they are stupid books. I put them on the shredder. I take the stripes, and I make oops out of paper. Yes.
Okay, I like that. I like that. A stupid book, you make it into something useful. Okay.
I'm raising three girls, and some books I don't want them to even know that people write those books. I go to the store and I see the title. I look at the cover and I think I'm going to try it. It's on top 10. So it must be a great book. And then I start reading it and it's not a great book. And it has to be destroyed properly. And recycling here in Portugal is a huge thing. It used to be when I was a child, people come to our houses, to our homes, to gather every piece of paper we had. My father read newspapers like he would eat breakfast. I don't know. Every single day I would read two newspapers. So we had a lot of newspapers. And by Saturday, a woman would come to our door and take all the paper. And so paper is very important to me. I don't know. It's valuable, you know. I put glass. I put on the bin, the recycle bin, easily. Plastic too, but paper, I always think, well, what can I do with this paper? Cereal boxes are great for me to try new sketches. And then when I do the sketches, I can put them to recycle. But first I use them. I use all the cardboard I get. And only then it goes to the recycle bin.
Yeah.
Paper is a fiber, right?
Right.
Paper
right.
is a fiber, just like fabric. It's another kind of fiber, but it's a fiber.
Yep.
And I guess I'm passionate about fiber. I don't know.
Well, clearly, if you're using the cereal boxes, yeah, that's passion right there. Yep. Yeah. Well, that was the one thing about your art is the hoops. Because we see people who do needlework in hoops and then hang it or sell it or give it away in hoop. I mean, it was designed in a hoop and it stays in a hoop. But usually it's just the standard metal or wooden hoop, and that's all you ever see. But your hoops, and now I did not realize that some of them are made out of stupid books. I'm loving that. But your hoops are as much a part of the art as the needlework or the painting. And I think that's one of the things that really caught my eye about your work is it's all elements all fit together. It's not like this piece of art on cloth and then here's this wooden hoop. The hoop is part of the art, and I really admire that.
I love the wood and I love to see the grain of the wood, but many of my hoops are made of bamboo, and bamboo hoops, I start using them because they are sustainable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, bamboo grows anywhere, and it grows very fast. So bamboo, sustainability is very important to me. And even the materials I use, I try to use vintage linen I get from street markets. They add another life, and then I gave it go. Picking up something that is old, it's very important to me because I think, how can I say this? Things deserve a second chances,
mm-hmm.
third chances. I don't know. Even when I make an embroidery, I sometimes think what people can do with that one day if they get tired of it.
Well,
they can change it and do something else, I guess. And that's wonderful. If they destroy my hoop, the embroidery to do something else, I think it's great. I sometimes think I'm making this with so much love, and probably they're going to offer this to someone, and that someone won't like it. I hope that person will see a way of transforming it and make it something different. I have a lot of things that belong to my grandmother. I don't like those things were meant to. Like mm-hmm. Little pieces of fabric to putting on top of the TV. You know, they used to embroidery or crochet.
Yeah.
They seem napkins, little napkins, round napkins. I don't know how they're called. And they put there on top of the TV with a vase on top with a flower. I don't know.
Yeah, doilies. We call them doilies.
Doilies.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use doilies in my house. But I can make something out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my grandmother would love that.
Yeah.
She would find it very interesting. And if I pick a lot of doilies and make a curtain, it's almost an homage to her. I'm putting her work to everyone to see. My grandmother did that or my mother did that. We can give things another chance. And I really like old materials, and I'm really concerned with sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes see tutorials where people pick up a large piece of fabric, really large, and then they put the hoop in the middle and they cut all around. And you could put the same amount of fabric could be used for four hoops, but all that fabric goes away. It's wasted. And mm-hmm. I can't see that. That's the reason why I start making stamp work, because I use all the fabric, but I add a lot of stripes of fabric, and I put them on a bag, and I thought I'm going to do something with this, and that's how the mushrooms were born, the mushrooms that are stamp work. because I can use all the pieces of the fabric to do the real little ads of the mushroom. I put them all together like a patchwork, and then I made the little ads. I made the stems. I don't know if
that's stems, the word. Sure.
The stems of the all that it's fabric. Last year I made an exercise. I put on a jar everything that was waste, and in the end I didn't add many waste, and I stuffed a little doll I made with all the bits of thread that I cut.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm finishing, I don't know how it's called. I embroidery, I finish.
Right.
It's dead. The thread is steady. I cut. That cut goes to a jar, and it's stuffing for dolls.
Hmm.
I don't throw any. I don't throw anything away.
Okay, now you're making me feel terrible because I throw away a lot of thread. I am not a very frugal thread user, and
I'm frugal in everything.
Well, that's terrific. So when we look at your art, then it has that extra dimension now for me in that beautiful piece of art, but also everything in there is reused in some way or saved from the trash bin as a scrap that most of us would throw away. You find a way to use it by doing stump work.
Yeah, stump work is very good for that. I could use muslin or organza. I have some scraps of that too. Sometimes I use them, but normally it's the remaining of the fabric because the hoop is round, you know,
right.
And the fabric is normally square, and then I get to cut around, and that's I can't avoid that because of the back I do. The back I do, I have to cut it off, so I reuse it.
The art that you're doing now, it's so unique to me, but how did that evolve? Is that something that you, you go from cross-stitch to really stump work with painting, supported with painting? It's such a combination of art to make these things. How did that evolve? Was that something that you saw in your head initially when you started doing these, or was it a progressive thing where you started just doing some simple surface embroidery and then saw how you could add additional dimension and texture to it?
I think it was a progression, but I was looking for something that speak to me, and I was thinking, what am I good at? And I'm very good in telling stories. And I'm very good with everything related with biology, because that's my roots are very related with botanical elements, because I was passionate about everything vegetable. I don't know. I work with microbiology, and that was the thing I love the most, and plants and algae. I had to mix all together the things I love, and books are something I love, and fantasy, it's very important to me, especially since my girls were born. They were raised when the Harry Potter movies were out, getting out. I read a lot to them. I'm crazy about Tim Burton's universe, and I always share a lot. One of our traditions here, it's in Halloween, we have to see Tim Burton's movies, all Tim Burton movies. and we do it, sometimes we see three of them, other times we see five, but we see Tim Burton's because I really love him. The way he portrays things, I really like his vision, his aesthetic, and a lot of lake animation. And of course, that our work is the reflex of what's our history, what is our experience.
Mm-hmm.
We are passionate about things rather than textiles, rather than what we do in our careers, And those things are the things that normally we like to express in our work. And so dark colors, for instance, it's because I'm I have a photophobia. I'm very sensitive to light. So I can't work, even if I try, I can't work with really bright colors. Working in a white, working on white blinds me. And I get dizzy and nausea. I can't work. My desk is gray. Everything around me is dark. And I like that. I feel comfortable with that. I tried to make something white this year because I was trying to make something new. And when I finished, I look at it and I thought, no, I can't bear with it. And I put a little watercolor because I couldn't look at it. I thought I can't go further without color because the white hurts my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I started I love linen, I love cotton, I love its texture, I love everything about it. And if I could find the right colors, I wouldn't dye my fabrics or paint them. But I never find the right colors because I need a gradient of color. I don't need, a black background or a blue background. No, I need that black to turn green. I need a little bit of purple, a little bit. I need several colors. And that's why I started painting them. At first, I used acrylic suitable for fabric, mm-hmm. Watercolors. But then I thought if people want to change this one day, they can't wash it.
Yeah.
So I start using acrylic like in paint, normal acrylic. I dilute it a little. The ironing, hot iron on top makes it very steady. I can wash it and it doesn't go away. And that's why I start using acrylics. A lot of people ask me, what do you use? But I see people using a lot of materials, even Sharpies, markers. They use markers, yep. Watercolors. You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And the secret is experiment and do something that you feel happy with it.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's no tricks. There's no. I don't know anything. I'm try. I try things. I see what. Sometimes I make huge mistakes. And sometimes I something takes me a lot of hours, and in the end I ruin it with an experiment, and that's not wasted time. It's lesson learned.
Right.
No, don't repeat it and do something else next.
Yeah.
But we're talking about my work. Why is different? It's because this is me.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because as I studied your work, even your brightest colored pieces are quite muted and on the dark side. And I thought, I wondered why that was, that everything you do is on the dark side. So it's hard on your eyes, but then see, that opens up another door for me in that within that darker, more muted palette, you have found such a range of color and ways of working with color to deliver your art and deliver a visual message without having to go to bright yellows and whites. I mean, because if you use a white or a bright color, it's just a little bit here and there. There's not a whole lot. And so now I'm even more intrigued that you're able, that you find such a range of colors when effectively a good portion of the color options you've eliminated just because they're hard for you to look at. But within the range of what you want to look at, you've really found a lot. That's most interesting.
I love color, and I'm passionate about color. I've been passionate about color all my life. And my sister, she went to art. She went to art school, and she was the one who teach me about color. I don't know if she knows that she was the one, but she was the one. She was crazy about Paul Klee. is an Austrian, I think is an Austrian painter, I don't know, from the 20s. And she used to show me how he combined colors. When I had to teach colors to my daughters, I used Paul Klee paintings and tapestry. Bauhaus, do you know Bauhaus, the school, the art school, German art school?
No, don't know that.
Well,
no.
Bauhaus was, I don't know, it was a crazy school. And most of the artists were women. And because they were women, they were not painting or making furniture, designing. They were working with tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, tapestry. And they were amazing, and they did amazing things. And when I had to teach colors to my daughters, I used Bauhaus books, Paul Klee, another painting that I really love, and now I don't, Vasarely. Vasarely is a Hungarian. He mixed colors really well, and some of those colors are bright, but I have to teach them about color, and I have to teach them all the colors, even the bright ones. so I use painting to show them the colors and so they could make exercise with color. And that knowledge came from my sister.
Mm-hmm.
She was crazy about Bauhaus and all the art that came from there. It was a very nice artistic movement. Of course, you know, the Kandinsky share, it's everywhere. Kandinsky was another teacher in that school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I digress. I digress a lot, sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
What I was saying, Paul Klee was the guy. And Botticelli, that is a classical painting, but is very good in mute colors, probably because his paintings are very old and made in walls, and the color faded away.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's my... I went from there, and then I buy all the colors, even the vibrant ones. And believe me, there are some vibrant colors in between. but I even use light effects colors. They have a lot of brightness. I use fluorescent for my moons, for example,
mm-hmm.
because I want them to be mutable. I want I make something, and I want it to change. Even the eyes. You ask me about the eyes.
Yeah, you really have a fascination with eyes. It's fun to fun to look at them. Yes.
Because when you look at something with eyes, you are looking for an expression.
Mm-hmm.
You relate to that. It's like a mushroom with an eye. You see there's an emotion in those eyes. There's emotion in that plant. No, but if that plant is in a certain position. And if it has eyes or if it has something that gives it some kind of emotion, you feel that emotion and you connect. For me, art is not about what I do. I don't call it art. I'm calling it art. I don't know why. What I do, when I need people to feel something, you know, look at it and feel something. It's not just an embroidery. It's a story. There's something there more than an embroidery, more than... texture more than color.
Mm-hmm.
And I it's very important to me that there's some kind of emotion. And eyes are the best thing for emotions. Hands are also a very good thing for emotions, the position of the hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do something with hands now. But eyes and mouths, lips in general, they have an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I put eyes in
Lot of things.
Venus fly traps and mushrooms.
Oh, that one, the Venus fly trap with the eyes. That's the one that I locked in on. That one I really like. That's that was such a unique combination, eyes and a Venus fly trap. That was skimming through your photos, and I just stopped there. Just stopped. That was good. Really like that one, yeah.
You know why that Venus flytrap had eyes? Because it is a plant that only feeds itself.
Yep.
Feeds itself from moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
No flies.
Okay. Okay. right.
Only moonlight, and that's why the eyes are open facing the moon. Some of them, one was looking at us because I wanted people to feel when they look a little bit the weirdness, and to feel the weirdness if an eye is looking at you, you feel it. You feel uncomfortable a little.
Mm-hmm.
Because that eye is looking at you. And I made an eye that follows you everywhere. If you are in the corner of the room, it's still looking at you.
Yeah.
and that's it for making you uncomfortable, because you shouldn't be looking at that. She's feeding herself. She likes to be quiet. She's facing the moon. And she likes to be quiet. And you shouldn't be looking at. And so there's an eye looking straight at you. And, yep. And it's a very... a little bit evil eye.
Yeah, it is a threatening eye. Yes, it is a threatening eye.
Yes, yes.
Well, that was the other thing. I got completely locked in to the descriptions that you write for each one of your pieces on your Etsy store. And it's so much fun to read, because you really describe so well what's behind each of these pieces. And it's fun to read those and see that there's much more than just a piece of art here. There's some real thought that goes into the whole concept. And each piece has a meaning. Even the hoop and how you direct the hoop or decorate the hoop has some meaning to it. And it's, yeah, I really enjoyed those descriptions.
I think no one reads it.
I did.
But I have to put it there, because sometimes people tell me, I like this piece. Do you know what's the message behind the piece? Maybe you won't connect if you know the message. Because sometimes it's really weird, or sometimes it's like a surreal dream or something.
Yeah.
But you may not connect with it. It's very important for me to put the story there, because somehow people may learn a little bit more about me, and that piece may have a different meaning.
Right.
It's not just a mushroom. It's something else. It's a little bit more. And I like information. I like stories. I like to romanticize the embroidery. I like to think that each hoop, it's like a stage, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's not the whole story, but it's a scene trapped in a photograph. Like if you were taking a photograph to a stage, there's a scenario, there are characters, and they have a story to tell. And mm-hmm. I think that's the difference. Maybe that's why people look at it and think that my work is a little bit different and it's a little bit weird.
No, well, it has every one of them. Every one of them says something, and I read way too many of the descriptions, and there were a couple where I say, okay, that's why you put it together, but the piece said something different to me. But I really enjoyed learning in each case what was behind it, because there is a story and thinking and a reason for the way you put those things together. And it was really fun to learn what those reasons were. I mean, I enjoyed the needle art for its own sake, but then to hear the story behind it really just added so much depth and meaning that, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Well, and then the other part, and the part you don't show, is that you paint the back of these things. So when people flip over this hoop, it's not just the raw backside of the needlework. There's a back, and you paint that. And you don't share the paintings. That's a surprise for each person who purchases one. Is that, do the paintings though continue the story of what's on front?
Not always.
Okay.
Well, I was telling you before that I started taking embroidery serious with cross stitch. And cross stitch is very demanding. The back has to be perfect. And I was very, how can I say, in needle painting, I try to be as perfect as I can. And I'm very perfect. I could show my backs, and sometimes my backs would look a lot like the front.
Mm-hmm.
Others, not exactly. It depends. But a lot of them, especially the botanical elements, I could show the back and it would be not very different from the front. But I'm obsessive compulsive about cleaning. Maybe because I'm a biologist, I don't know. And dust getting there, you know, dust in the back, it bothers me. And so I had to put a canvas to cover it up. And I make like a spider web with thread.
Uh-huh.
Then I put organic lavender that I take from my garden, a lot of lavender, and then I put a piece of fabric, and that piece of fabric I paint. And the reason why I paint it is because I'm saying goodbye to the front. The front doesn't belong to me anymore. You understand?
Uh-huh.
The back is still mine. The back is still mine. The front is no longer mine. When I send it away, then the back can be used, the idea on the back can be used to make an embroidery, a front. And then I make a front from the back of another whoop. Do you understand?
Yep.
We were talking about not about being frugal with materials.
Yes.
That's another way of being frugal. I make some sketches in cardboard and paper I get around. I don't buy notebooks or journals to make drawings. I make drawings wherever I can. And my bags are the best way for me to try an idea.
Ah.
If it works painted in one bag, it might work next time when I make an embroidery.
Oh.
So if I made a sequence of my embroidery hoops, you would see that my next piece, because I work a piece, single piece by single piece, I make one piece, when it's completed, I start another, and I work like that. I'm very disciplined. It's the cross-stitching, I guess. And the back of one hoop, it's the front of the other hoop, unless I don't like it, and I think, no, this is not going to work. The Venus flytrap we talked before,
mm-hmm.
It was the back of a hoop I made of a spider web. I make that back because the idea was on my mind. And I thought, well, there you go. I have my next piece. And I start, when the hoop goes away, I don't take pictures anymore. That's the reason why it's so difficult for me to gather in pictures,
mm-hmm.
photographs, because I don't collect them.
Yeah.
They're not mine anymore. The piece belongs to someone else. It's not mine anymore. So I don't have photos of things I did.
Yeah.
I don't have any of my cross stitching.
No.
Any photographs. I made religious custom orders. I'm not a religious person, but I made some things for christenings. It's christenings, baptizing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
I did a lot, really good things, really complex things, and I don't have even one photo to show.
Oh, no.
I don't have anything, because they were not mine, and the idea was not mine, so it went away, and it's gone. It's in my memory.
Yeah.
It's in my experience. I'm a book, right? I have...
Yep.
Words written, I can take the pages off, but the story, you can still understand the story.
Yep.
Some of the pages are gone, but it's still a story there.
Still there. Yep, still there.
Yes.
That's most interesting, that the back you paint becomes the next embroidery. It's like a testing ground then.
Yes, and it works. I totally recommend people to do that, because sometimes you imagine, you have an idea in your head, and you put it in the hoop and it doesn't work, and you're wasting material. And it's that way. I can see it already framed. It's on in the back, but it's already framed. It's there, and I can figure out where I can put the lights, where I can put the shadows,
mm-hmm.
the colors I will use, and I start from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What's the next step? Are you finding that you're wanting to branch out into other areas of needle art, or are you still have a lot of ideas with what you're doing?
I don't have a plan. I never had.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fair.
I'm I do things because I have to do them. I was explaining this to a girl in the other day. She sent me a message and she was asking me if she could make a living out of this. And I was explaining to her that if you're making art to have a good life and to have a big car, a big house, that's the wrong thing to do. You mm-hmm. have to do art because it's in your DNA. You can't do anything else. That's the only way you won't get frustrated. Because when I started, I did things so different from the others. I was sometimes comparing my work with others, and I was, I could never do this. Can I do this to sell more? But then I have to be honest with myself, because I'm me. I live with me every day. I can't lie to myself. So I can't do something that doesn't speak to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do something that it's based on my experiences, based on my life. And you do hard, you make things because it makes you happy. Then it comes the successful. Are you successful? I don't know. I'm very successful in my life because I'm a very happy person.
Mm-hmm.
But because I see happiness in every single thing, I don't easily get frustrated. I don't easily get demotivated, but that's because I'm true to myself. I'm being true to myself. I would like to make, the only plan I have is to reach a large number of people. I'm when I put the price on my work, I usually ignore a lot of hours of work. I ignore, and I think I have to make it as affordable as I can so anyone can buy it. But sometimes I get messages of people that cannot afford, and now we are going to face an economical tornado. It's coming.
Yep.
And I believe my next step will be to make patterns. I have to make patterns because a lot of people say, I love your work, I love what you're doing, but I can't afford it. I really am making the lowest price I can, because what I do takes a lot of time.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of hours, and sometimes, and the piece takes a lot of time, and I really work all day. I'm really taking this serious. So I'm really trying to make a job out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't work for so many hours and gain anything. Anything back. Or else I would be doing things for myself just to put on my wall.
Right.
I don't have enough walls, and my girls, they are making art all the time, and I need to put their things in on the walls. They have priority, so my art cannot be in boxes. They have to go somewhere, and mm-hmm. I have to reach a lot of people. Nowadays, lately, I've been doing brooches, small pieces, because they can be a little bit. It's wearable art, and yeah. It's more affordable. And I'm trying to make a few of these because people are asking me for more affordable pieces. And the patterns will be maybe the next step. Tutorials, I'm lousy with technology. I'm not good at it. I hate computers. I hate having to take photos of my work, filming. I'm not good at videos, all those things. I wouldn't be happy to do that unless someone else was doing it and I was working and they wouldn't bother me while I were. But patterns, maybe I can do patterns. Maybe so people, because everyone can do this. Anyone can do. Each one of us has a creative point of view. You have a vision. My grandmother has a vision. My mother has a vision. You can put yourself out there and make something. The important thing is to be happy doing something. And I'm always motivating people to try. If you like one of my pieces and you think you could try it, try it. I don't know. A woman in the other day was telling me that she received a lot of hate messages because she made something that looked like my hoop, And some people that realized the resemblance were telling her that she was copying. And I told her, go ahead. That piece is mine. It doesn't belong to anyone. I yep. didn't sold it already. I'm not going to sold it anymore. I will keep it and go ahead.
Yep.
Because if I put it out there, it's not mine.
Yeah.
If I show a photo of one of my pieces, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Grab the idea. The ideas are there. And if you can improve, if you can do enough, but if that made you happy, I don't care. Ideas come and go everywhere.
I was gonna say you got a bunch more ideas, you're okay.
Yes, exactly. You don't steal ideas. Ideas are floating in the air.
Yeah.
And you can grab them and use them. I don't care. If someone is inspired by one of my pieces, the only thing I'm afraid is that the person who bought the piece may think, well, I bought that piece and now someone is copying. But it's impossible to copy.
Yeah, yeah.
it's impossible. Even if I put out there a pattern, every person will make something that is personal,
mm-hmm.
that is authentic to them.
Right.
That's
right.
Not mine.
Becomes their own. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the important thing about patterns. I did cross stitching a long time, and that was the frustrating part for me. It's mathematic. I can't make a lot of changes because the composition will not work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so frustrated with that I thought, no, embroidery cannot be mathematic. It has to be something else. For me, it has to be something else.
Right.
And that's why I start doing other stitching rather than cross stitch. But if I put a pattern out there, I'm going to put something that allows people to make changes, change colors, change everything, because mm-hmm. that's the fun part, is yeah. to create,
yep.
to be the owner of the idea. I will be the owner of the idea, but the other person will be collaborating with me.
There
right?
we go. Yep, there we go.
It has
yep.
to be a collaboration.
Yep. Andrea, thank you so much. This has been a blast. Really have enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. I digress a lot.
No. Learned so much. Learned an awful lot. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the time, and thanks to everybody for listening.